Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Restart. Hello and welcome to Crackin' Crime. I'm your host, Jamie Tilson.
I'm your co-host, Seth Tilson.
Welcome to our very first episode. You're going to bear with us as we fumble through all this and see how it's going to go.
A lot of bearing.
A lot of bearing. Yeah. So today, I'm going to tell you a story about the trench coat robbers. Have you ever heard about the trench coat robbers?
No, I cannot. I have not.
It's a pretty interesting story about, obviously, bank robbers. Okay? So,
where was it at?
We'd like to tell everybody a little bit about the show that we're doing. So our show is me, Jamie Tilson. I'm going to be telling Seth a story that he's never heard before. And we're hoping that we have a little bit of lightheartedness, a little banter. And we're just going to kind of see where the stories take us. Okay? So give us some time. And we'll put something out decent. Okay? That's good?
Yeah, that works for me.
That works for you?
Yeah, it works for me.
All right, fantastic. Well, because that's what the whole idea is. Huh. All right. Okay. All right. So we're going to start talking about these trench coat robbers. All right, dude, this story is freaking crazy. So there's two different players in the story. All right, so you got Ray Lewis Bowman and William Arthur Kirkpatrick. They robbed banks for a total of 15 years. And they stole, robbed from banks, like 28 banks.
Through 15 years.
Throughout 15 years.
Which years were these?
So they started in the early 80s, and they were caught in like 97. Yeah.
Is there a total amount stolen?
Yes, I have that. We'll get to that when we start talking to some of the banks.
All right.
Yeah. So it's actually a pretty crazy story the way that they did it. Nobody had any idea who the people were. They wore disguises, obviously trench coats in some of them. And they would wear like makeup, fake mustaches, all kinds of different little things. They didn't go in traditionally, so they would either go in before or they would go in after the bank closed. Yeah, crazy. And one of them, it was really crazy because they actually broke into the bank manager's house. Kidnapped everybody in there.
So they're going into the banks before and after their... So not during business hours.
Not during business hours. Yeah.
So no one's there.
No people, just employees.
Before they're open?
Yeah.
So what, just during setup or close down?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Because for a second there, I was wondering why they bothered to wear makeup and mustaches at all. I was like, if no one's there, like, what's the point of wearing a mustache?
I know. Yeah. I'd be like, yeah.
Were there cameras back then?
There were some cameras.
In the 80s, were there?
Yeah, especially in the 90s.
I don't know.
Yeah. Huh. In the 90s, there was definitely some.
I thought that was invented in my day.
What would be like 2000s? Nobody knows your age.
It was 90s, 10 years later.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. Well, they were still robbing banks in the 90s.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Well. So you think back to the 90s and it's like, oh, yeah, this is some of the stuff we had.
Huh.
Yeah.
I didn't know they had cameras then.
They did. They absolutely did.
I guess they must have. I was watching America's Funniest Home Videos back then, so.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And people had, I mean, those things were huge. They were like massive camcorders. Mm-hmm. You had to like wear a shoulder brace even in order to carry the darn thing.
You had to have some kind of weightlifting background.
Oh, absolutely.
To be able to hold them up. Yeah.
Yeah. Put on your weight belt just in order to pick the thing up.
Yeah, you got
to
support your back.
All right. So Bowman lived in Kansas City at the time of his arrest. And Kirkpatrick lived in Barnesville, Minnesota.
Hmm.
So they didn't live in the same town. They weren't really connected in any other way other than they would get together, they would rob these banks, and then they would go their separate ways.
Hmm.
Then they would meet up again like a year later or 6 months later, whatever. Do the same thing. Yeah. Absolutely crazy. So a little bit more story about Ray Lewis Bowman. He dated Cheryl Clark in 1983. He lived very extravagantly. And he would take her like limos. But he always had a room that she would not go in. So she wasn't allowed to go in his room. They broke up in 1989. And he started dating Jenny Delamonte. They moved in together in 1990. He had a locked room she wasn't allowed to go into. She never even tried to. Would never talk about his employment. So she had no idea. And then he took care of her completely. Took care of her kids. They would live crazy extravagantly. Right? Mm. And then he would leave town for his business trips. And she didn't know what he did for employment. Nothing. Never asked. Didn't care. Just had money.
I had a friend in high school kind of like that. I had two friends. They were brothers, and they had a mom that was dating their stepdad. They'd been together for a long time, and no one ever knew what he did. You'd always ask him because they lived in the really big house, biggest house in the neighborhood. Like, geez, how do you guys do that? What does your stepdad do? Oh, I don't know what he does. And then, like, I was young, so I didn't put it together like he had a tattoo on his face. But to me, I was like, oh, it's probably corporate. Somewhere.
Oh yeah, definitely corporate.
Probably uses makeup, covers it up. I don't know what he does. I guess maybe he's a UFC fighter. I don't know. And we're not allowed to see his fights. I don't know.
Right.
But I can see that. Right. But then, like, you know, SWAT came in there and like took him away. It was drugs.
Definitely drugs. Okay, he told us all this for what? What did they take him away for?
Drugs.
Oh, drugs.
Yeah, trafficking.
Drugs, because he had like a marijuana tattoo on his cheek.
I don't know what it was. I think it was a skull.
It was a skull.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It was like, to me, it was like, so it didn't probably, like,
give away his
he
employment.
Probably goes to church. Most likely.
I was thinking like gave away his employment. Like, you know, he's a yeah. truck driver. He's got a semi-truck on his neck. You know, like, I don't wonder what that guy does.
Yeah. There's always U-Haul trucks in the driveway, but no one was ever moving. We're just like, that's awkward. Whatever, you want to play basketball?
Oh, that's great. Okay, so now on to William Kirkpatrick. Okay, William had a girlfriend, Myra Penny. She knew all about the robber. She actually helped everything. So he would say, we're going to this town. You need to find me motel rooms. They would get everything booked. She would pay all of the bills while they were gone. Like, they like kept business receipts.
What?
No. She'd pay all the bills for him. She's like, yeah, this is a tax hotel. Deduction. All right, this is all tax deduction.
Hotel in Holdridge when we robbed that bank. You claim that on taxes.
That's right. Yeah. You claim all of that. They couldn't keep up with them either. They were like, who are these people? Don't think about the people that are, you know, claiming the bank robberies on their taxes.
When you're scoping that place out, how much do you think you're going to spend on food?
Yeah. You're going to make like $14,000. Okay, so we're spending $10,000. All right, so yeah. Our overhead's a little bit bad. You need to be picking better banks.
That was funny.
Oh, man. So, in one of them, it was the motel in Fife, Washington. They stayed under the alias of Don Wilson.
The state, Washington?
Fifi. Fief? I don't know, Paul. I apologize. I don't know the name. It's Fife. Fife, Fifi, Washington,
Fifi?
Though?
I promise it's not Fifi. I'm from a place where I could tell you what a Fifi is. Something a man uses when he's by himself. Usually contains a sock and some lotion. Whatever you want. I wouldn't recommend soap.
All right, so what started the whole demise of this situation? So for Bowman, He had storage lockers all over the place, and this is where he kept a lot of his cash. He kept a bunch of stuff in there, right?
Bum was the one with the girl that knows everything. That
doesn't know anything. That's Kirkpatrick.
Okay. So, yeah. So that's Kansas guy.
Yeah, Kansas guy. Kansas City, okay. Missouri.
Yeah.
So Bowman failed to pay rent on one of his storage lockers. He just like has all this cash and guns, and let's see what all they. He's got a bulletproof vest, baseball hat with police on it, police scanners with earbuds, books on disguises, videos about picking locks.
But he didn't have the girlfriend that kept track of his taxes and his expenses like the other one.
Yeah. So his. Yeah. His accountant was not keeping up good. All right. So he was not. So on May 22nd of 1997, the manager of Federal Van and Storage in Kansas City calls the FBI and was like, we went in there. Basically, we got some shit to show you. Okay. Because we were just going to sell some stuff, but there's like, all these silencer parts, bulletproof vests, baseball hats, police scanners, you know, like, we kind of think that you might need to come in here.
Well, now I'm curious as to why you would have a storage and a bedroom with a locked door no one's allowed to get
into. I think he kept the cash in his house.
He should have kept
and you'll find out a little bit more because they kept stuff all over the U.S. And and not terribly far from where they were stealing. Yeah. Yeah, they'd rob these banks. I'll get into that. So the manager called ATF, not the FBI. I said the FBI. He called ATF, and they identified Bowman by pictures as Charles Clark. That was the alias that he was using, was Charles Clark. So Bowman also kind of messed up because he must have been thinking that, you know, people were going to like come getting on to him a little bit. It was probably after the ATF was over messing with, you know, his storage unit.
Yeah.
And they're like, shit, they took all my burglary stuff. So, I mean, maybe they got to buy more or, you know. Mm. But Bowman takes $480,000 in two separate briefcases to his estranged brother. They're not really close. But he goes to his brother, which is Dan Bowman. He says, hey, basically, don't steal this money from me. I know we don't get along no more, but keep this money. And if anything ever happens to me, give this to my two daughters. You know, $240 for this daughter, $240 for this daughter. Unless he broke it up in different. Maybe it was like $300,000 to this one, and it was like $280 to the other one. Yeah. He's like, or $180 the other one. He's like, yeah, you know. Yeah. This one's get a little like more extravagant taste. Yeah,
if one of them's got like, you know, is good at sports, he's got a scholarship going, like maybe give her less
because she's not going to need it. Right, yeah, because she might maybe doesn't need so much. Yeah.
I can see that.
So, but Dan was, you know, not the thief that his brother was. So Dan calls the FBI and he's like, there's something seriously fucked up. I opened these. I was like, all right, I'll keep these briefcases full of clothes in this closet, just in case they need something, you know, I don't know, it's very odd. But he opens them, and he's, again, you know, like weird denominations, you got $300,000 for this daughter, $180,000 for this daughter, he doesn't find it fair, and he's like, screw that, I'm calling the FBI, we're gonna basically check into this, all right? So the FBI gets there, they check the numbers, and a few of the serial numbers come back to, it was C First Bank, which was the very last robbery, which is a huge amount that they stole. It's huge. But they found the ABA numbers, and they matched up to the from the bank robbery. So they were already kind of closed in on Bowman.
Do you have ABA numbers for us people who aren't police officers?
I don't know. I'm guessing like, I don't know. I don't even want to make a guess. ABA number. That's the long number on your dollar bill.
Well, I'm glad my tax dollars pay you. I really
am. Okay, now, that was kind of the closing in on the demise of Bowman. But before anything really happened with Bowman, Kirkpatrick got stopped by Nebraska State Patrol in just outside of Lincoln off of I-80 on November 10th, 1997. Because he was going 7 miles an hour over the speed limit. And he, I've got this right here.
That's why I cruise at four over.
So the state trooper was apparently Chris Bigsby, and he was driving a rental car because they had gone to Las Vegas, I believe, to like clean out a storage unit that he had in Las Vegas. In the vehicle, though, it's crazy. Let's see if I can find... how much he had in the...
I'm interested to know what he had in there, because if I have an open container, I'm going two under.
Right. No, okay, so this is nuts. Ready? So he's coming from Las Vegas. He's got $1,808,776 in the car.
Jeez.
He's got a letter or a note in the vehicle. It's got Ray Bowman's zip code on it. He's got credit cards... in a different person's name, and then his police scanner, plastic ties, and then he's got four fake mustaches in the vehicle.
And a crayon-colored map of his next person planning on hitting. It's got an X on the bank.
It's got an X. Like, okay, these are all the ones we've done.
This is where we're going. We always color the banks in blue. Yeah.
The larger scores, and then this is the red X's as to where all of our money's at throughout the U.S. This is where it's all yeah. at. Yeah, come get it.
That is hilarious.
So his girlfriend, Penny, was arrested for money laundering when she came to bail out Kirkpatrick from jail, because she obviously used stolen money.
Oh, God.
To pay the bail.
Jesus Christ. They did so good for so long. And then they did.
Yeah, 15 years, they're like the biggest geniuses that ever. Oh, like, people are like, holy shit, we'll never find these people. We're not finding any money. We don't even know who they are. We got zero clue who these people are. Jesus, then all of a sudden, Christ. They just unravel. Yeah, like, all right. You got $1.8 million in the trunk of this rental car. We're driving down Interstate 80. All right, I don't like going slow. All right, so the speed limit back then is probably 65.
Yeah.
So I was like, go 72. Right?
Yeah. Screw it. Why not?
We can't be fucked with.
Swerve.
Yeah, swerve all over the road. It doesn't matter.
Don't even use turn signals.
Both of these lanes on this interstate, they're ours. Don't wear your seatbelt. Fuck that.
To quote Tropic Thunder... I believe it was Robert Downey Jr. You never go full retard. I don't mean anything disrespectful to the mentally challenged people either, by the way. It's just I'm quoting a movie that I find hilarious.
All right, so when I was going through this and I was looking at some of the, it was the appellate records for the United States versus Bowman when he appealed the case. They charged him with five banks. So the only information I could really find was five of the banks. All right. So the first bank that they charged him with was in Des Moines, Iowa. It was Hawkeye Bank. They got away with $48,500. They went at 3:30 in the morning on November 6, 1987. They went into the home of an employee of the bank. They tied up the employee, the wife, and the children, loaded them up into the vehicle, and then they went to the bank before bank hours, went into the bank, and then as employees entered, basically then they had the employees take them in, entered into the vault, made it with
$48,000.
Hmm. Okay. Bank number two was Michigan National Bank in Saginaw, Michigan. So, 20 minutes before opening, on May 28th of 1992, they entered through a locked door, because this is where the lock picks come in from Bowman, right? So, they would pick the lock. He would have like a piece of metal on a wristband on his wrist, and then Kirkpatrick would have the plastic ties. So, then while Bowman had a gun, Kirkpatrick would tie everybody up, and then... Bowman would take the teller back into the vault, and then he would load up all of the money out of the safe deposit boxes and out of the vault and stuff. Mm. So on this bank, they've got away with $122,386. And then on May 29th of 92, the day after the robbery, they went to a bank. They went to Norwest Bank in Bloomington, Michigan, which is not far from, I believe,
what was the amount of time in between these two jobs you're speaking of right now?
All right, so this one was May 28th of 92. The other one was 87. But they said that they had robbed 28 banks, or is what they were suspected of.
So between the first and the second, it was a 5-year gap.
Yes.
Huh.
Yeah, you couldn't live off 48,000. Well, maybe in 87. But 122,000. 122,000 in 92 was a pretty big take.
Yeah.
Right? This is the funny part, though, because, again, on May 29th, the day after that robbery, they went to another bank, and they deposited money into a safe deposit box.
The yellow bank on the map with crayons is not it. We don't touch that one. That's our money.
I'm pretty sure that they actually had that map because this was all found out. So they found this. When the police went in to Norwest Bank in Bloomington, Michigan, they went to that safe deposit box. They found a fake mustache and $11,900.
They put the fake mustache in the bank in a safety deposit box.
All right, we cannot be caught with this. Money, fine. Fake mustaches, we're screwed. Okay?
Jesus fucking in the box, dude.
Oh, it's fantastic. Oh, man, that was hilarious. All right, Bank 3. U.S. Bank in Portland, Oregon. At 5 p.m., they again entered through a locked door. Bowman had the L-shaped.
That's our first time.
This is our first time. Yeah, give it to me. All right, an L-shaped piece of wire. He took the manager to the vault while Kirkpatrick tied up the employees. This time they made away with $233,026. So they rented rooms that time from January 6th of 94 to February 17th of 94. So you're talking, what, 6 weeks? 5-6 weeks that they're in a hotel room casing this whole thing out. Jeez. Then on February 8th of 94... they opened another safe deposit box at C-First Bank in Seattle, Washington, where they put in $7,900, semi-automatic handgun, and a revolver. Yeah, we're all on that one.
Jeez.
Yeah. Bank number 4 was National City Bank in West Carrollton, Ohio, on October 6th of 94. So just after closing this time, they entered the bank. Kirkpatrick tied up all of the employees. Bowman had the teller open the safe. $362,529. They were staying at a hotel in Indianapolis October 3rd through the 7th of 94.
Does it say what part of Indianapolis?
What's that?
Does it say what part of Indianapolis?
It just said Indianapolis.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, in 94. And then in Clive, Iowa, the day after the bank robbery, they went to Brenton Bank in Clive, Iowa, $200,020, and a handgun was in that one. So this is money that they just got stashed now in all these different safe deposit boxes while they're stealing other safe deposit boxes.
Exactly,
yeah. Yeah. All right, now the worst one. Well, the best one, like the best hit that they had. But this is the one that really caught everybody's attention. Like 200,000, 300,000 is big. People are like, hey, we're looking for these guys. This one was big. All right. So C-First Bank, this is their last one, Lakewood, Washington. Okay. February 10th of 97, around 6:30 p.m., after the bank had closed, they entered again through locked doors. Now, the bank had just received large deposits, and all the employees were in there. They're counting and stamping all of these bills. when they came in. So again, they do the same thing. Bowman takes the people back to the all the money, and now they're handcuffing them with the plastic ties. They put them all into a room because there's so much money. The money weighed 355 pounds. So it took both of them to carry the money out of the bank. They made away with $4,461,681.
Jeez.
Yeah. Now, on their way back, they opened safe deposit boxes in Murray, Utah, Denver, Colorado, Omaha, Nebraska, again, Clive, Iowa, Kansas City, Missouri, all rented on consecutive days as they're traveling back, right? And it was started on February 12th. So this is 2 days after the big robbery. In Bowman's name, in one of the... Oh, maybe that was all of them. They were. This was all in Bowman's name. And then they found $1,485,400, two revolvers, four handguns.
No mustache?
No mustaches, though. No mustache this time. I think those were getting a little expensive, so they were like, leave guns. Okay, but we need to quit spending. Our mustache budget is like way out of whack
now. I'll put the black one in there, but the red one I'm keeping.
I'm keeping that one. Yeah.
Everybody loves a redhead.
So it's absolutely crazy. All right, and then I did a little bit of research. That's all I got. So basically they were both arrested, obviously. They stood their day in court. I believe they were both completely found guilty, right? They had so much against them at this point.
Yeah.
They built a really strong case. You really can't find anything about Ray Bowman. But I guess I will tell this part. So Kirkpatrick ends up working with the... he turns state's evidence, basically. And so does his girlfriend. So they're basically giving away all the secrets, giving away everything about Bowman. So then that way they can get the whole story. This is how they find everything. You know, it's crazy. But when I tried to look up on Ray Bowman, I couldn't find out that much other than his appeal, which was not upheld. They didn't mess with anything. He had to serve. He got 24 years in prison, while Kirkpatrick only got... They say that I didn't write down how long Kirkpatrick got, but it wasn't that long. I think he ended up serving like 5 or 10 years and he was out. Yeah. Bowman got 24 years. When I looked up his, I don't know that this was him, okay? But it looks like he died in 2011. So it just says that he was deceased at 67 years old. So I'm pretty sure that that was him, but I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah.
Kirkpatrick was released in 2011. Yeah. So it says that he, and I think that they got sentenced in like 2000. So he did like 11 years for all this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck, almost worth it.
Well, unless they've still got their mustaches hidden somewhere, you know. Otherwise, it's not worth it at all. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you had this glorious, like, collection of these fake mustaches, then it'd be all worth it. Yeah, it'd be like 11 years. God, I can't wait till I get out and I get all these mustaches back.
It takes me 3 months to grow one. Yeah. I can see that.
Oh, man, that's fantastic. Yeah, it was the New Yorker newspaper that posts that they were active for 15 years as bank robbers.
Hmm.
They tell other stories about how they kind of met in Kansas City, Missouri, stuff like that. They also say that Kirkpatrick's girlfriend and they were building a house up in Minnesota, and she like paid like $180,000 in cash over the time period as they were doing it. So then they were already being like investigated by the IRS and stuff too before the traffic stop.
Really?
So there was a bunch of, I mean, it was finally coming to the end. So, but it's really nuts that they were able to, for 15 years, they know nothing. You know, they're just called the Trenchcoat Robbers. You really can't hardly find anything about these people anywhere. You know, it's crazy. So even doing research for this, there's not that much. You know, a couple newspaper articles here and there, but there's really not that much. I know that back in the 2000s, I had watched Investigates on like Discovery or something. Investigators maybe. And it was just a fantastic documentary. So if you want to learn more, you want to watch a little bit more of a serious documentary on it, get way better details, same details, but you know, a little bit more.
Better described, less mustache talk.
Less mustache talk. But I mean, a little bit more boring. If that's more in your style, then go check that out. It was actually a really good documentary. I really enjoyed it. Okay. So, if you like the telling of our story and the way that we told it, then tune in next week because we're going to find something else. Don't have nothing yet, but we'll keep checking and we'll put out something else.
Damn right. Living in a small town, we ain't got shit else going on. Huskers suck at football this year. So
oh my gosh.
Do?
I know. Yeah. I know. Well, that's not going to change for at least another 5 years. Yeah. So.
Yep.
But it's still fun to watch. I'll still be there every Saturday.
Yep.
So, all right. Well, that's all we got for you guys. Check us out on all the social media places. Listen to this anywhere you get your podcasts. And we'll chat at you guys next week.
Well, yeah. Until next time.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's,